Good morning. Welcome to Turn Out Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Inika Hamilton, back to open up with you about the latest on the dance scene and the heart of what moves us. Thank you for tuning in to share time and rhythm with us. Welcome to this dance space. Well, folks, as you groove into the space this morning, we invite you to come in as we explore the stories that live both on and beyond the stage. And today, we're going to take a journey and delve into a conversation that explores movement as an entranceway into the deeper layers of human experience. Here to discuss and coming up on the show is teacher, dancer, and choreographer Teddy Tapple. Teddy's in the house and will be with us for the full hour, so stay tuned. Join us for the conversation. We're going to take a break and be right back with Teddy Tapple. Welcome back to Turnout Radio. I'm Nicole Inika Hamilton. My guest today, Teddy Tapple, has been a teacher, dancer, and choreographer for over 35 years. At the heart of her work is an interest in exploring movement as an entranceway into the deeper layers of human experience. Now, Teddy is an award-winning artist with a reputation for creating innovative and deeply sensitive work. She is inspired by a long-term engagement with somatic practices that access the intelligence of the body and reveal its intrinsic expressive language. Along with her studies with Min Tanaka, she has worked extensively with renowned teachers Janet Adler and Judith Koltai in the disciplines of authentic movement and embodied practice. Teddy has taught across the country and at the Stratford Festival and Playwrights Workshop of Montreal. From 1997 to 2013, she played a principal role in the training of actors and playwrights at the National Theatre School of Canada. Please join me in welcoming to the show Teddy Tapple. Hello, Teddy.
Hello, Nicole.
What a pleasure it is to welcome you to the program. How are you doing as you enter into the space today?
Oh, I'm doing really well. I'm enjoying the beauty of the spring's arrival all around me. I'm in the country right now, so yeah, and I'm excited to share some thoughts with you and see what comes up in our conversation. I'm looking forward to it.
As am I. And might I say that I do enjoy the consideration of the arrival of spring.
Yeah, I mean, everything that was dormant and so invisible is now starting to take form, which is the essence of creativity.
You know, I'm definitely going to need to unpack that. I want to return to that by perhaps maybe entering from this space. I'd shared at the heart of your work is an interest in exploring movement as an entranceway into the deeper layers of human experience. Talk to us, please, Teddy, about that entranceway, that interest, and that curiosity.
Well, what I can say, Nicole, is when I very first started to make dances, I didn't really know how to do that. And so I remember making a piece that I think I called Any Second Now, and it was about the end of the world. I mean, this was in my early 20s, and I used movement from my dance class, and I used some pedestrian gestures, and I made this piece, and it was about a very serious subject. And afterwards, people said to me, oh, that was so quirky, and that was so cool. And I was like, oh, wow, that was not my intention. I wanted to make something that was deep and meaningful, but I couldn't access the movement yet. I didn't know how to, or where to go, or how to look. It's been my quest as an artist to look at the depth of things. I mean, I think it's in my nature. It's who I am. I'm not very comfortable in the superficial. Then I needed to find practices and ways in that would allow me to access some of the deep things that were welling up in me as a young person, as a young artist, that I felt I needed to get out or to express, to share, to communicate.
Has there been anything that you've discovered throughout the course of your journey about how to access what you seek?
So many ways I could possibly answer this question, but what's coming first for me is that it's all there. So then I need to create an environment where I can listen and allow that what is there to emerge. I guess that's what I was saying about nature. You know, it's all there. It's just dormant. And, you know, it requires light and heat for things to start to grow. For me as an artist, it required time, space, listening, trusting, allowing, courage, support for what was inside to start to come out.
Listening and trusting resonates with me in such a meaningful way, because I think about many years ago, a spiritual advisor had shared with me, it's already in you, Nicole. And when I heard that, it opened up a significant space of thought for me, because I believe it was in that moment that I really started to recognize the truth of those words, that what it is that I was seeking as an artist in order to create was already within. And so the trusting that you speak of was important, because I needed to trust that recognition, that understanding that it's already there. It's already lying within. It may be dormant. And now it's important that I trust what is within, that I listen to what is within, that I access what is within, and perhaps create from that space of understanding.
So this, when we talk about embodiment, and as dancers, I mean, we use that word a lot. A lot of my ground form training was in a practice called authentic movement, where you listen for impulses that are arising inside and you bring them into form through movement. You allow your body to follow that impulse. The more time I had with the practice, the deeper the excavation would go. There's also in this practice a witness, which is somebody who is seeing me. My eyes are closed and I'm listening and following. So there's somebody that's kind of holding that space, helping me to remember what it is that I did, allowing me to see myself more clearly. It sounds very therapeutic, and it actually has a therapeutic origin. And I used it as an artist, because I think art can also be, you know, the origins of much of art is that there's no separation. It is also therapeutic for body, mind, and soul.
Can you share further about the impulses?
Well, it's an interesting word. I mean, if you look it up in the dictionary, because I've taught authentic movement for a long time, and there's often conversation about what is an impulse. And an impulse in the dictionary is just is something that takes you into motion, or that takes something into motion. So in my experience of authentic movement, it can just be a shift. It can actually be an image that just comes to my mind and I embody it. Yeah, it's just something that takes me into action, whether it's an emotion that has sensation connected to it, or it's a kind of like a pull somewhere to go to the ground, to begin to run, to whatever that is, it's something that's coming through me. And even in an impulse can also remain invisible. It can be extremely subtle, but it's kind of the life force of the body. That's, you know, while we're alive, there's continual inner movement. It's our inner world, but we rarely pay attention to it.
Very intriguing. So the impulse is usually internal.
Its initiation, I think, is within, because it can also be a response to something external. So a sound or an awareness of others in a space in this practice, that can also, but it's going to pass through my physical being.
I think there's something quite powerful about that share, because when I think about how the impulse can move through the body and then potentially spark an experience, an idea, a thought, a way of feeling or being, there is a great amount of freedom that can come from that. I consider the connection to self that can also come from that as well, among many things, but those are some of what comes up for me.
I mean, that was certainly my experience in terms like when I was seeking a new practice to get more in touch with my own personal connection to my work as an artist. This was when I was introduced to authentic movement. I was seeking to know my emotional landscape better. I felt that, I intuited, or some of it was intuitive, some of it was conscious. Like, I don't feel free. I don't feel as free as I want to feel. This practice was introduced to me by a friend, authentic movement practice, where you spend time attending to what's arising without judging it, without even needing to know what it means, but just allowing it to move through you. And that became the source of some of my earlier works. It was a kind of excavation. You go in, you go deeper, you deeper, you pull out these gems or these images, these themes, these ideas that then become, there's a piece in here, there's a dance in here. Yeah, allowing the sort of like a writer with a blank page. So not going in, deciding what I'm going to do a dance about, but allowing that dance to come through me. You know, in a way, it's the origins of Western modern dance. You know, Isadora Duncan standing in the Greek theater, in the ruins of the Greek theater, waiting for that divine or whatever that was for her, that impulse to come through, and just waiting and waiting and waiting until she's moved by, I mean, that's how she described her experience. Not that I was in a, you know, Greek theater ruins, you know, I'm not Isadora Duncan, but I was inspired by her story and her refusal to just follow what was popular at the time, that was very codified and very restrictive. Yeah, she was seeking something far more human, I think. That's a loaded thing to say, I realize as I say it, but a freedom of expression that is like she had no choice but to seek that. I didn't feel like her, but I felt a sense of a longing for a deeper connection. Who am I as an artist? What do I need to talk about? What do I need to express? And then, you know, it was like an excavation, a certain amount of that deep personal story came through me and came out and became work. And then there was more space for other things that were not so much about my deep personal story.
Well, one of the things that comes up for me is that I think about just how the practice may also have a great potential to allow for self-compassion. And so honoring whatever comes up in the body, in the spirit, in the being.
there is a self-compassion, because what stops us is the judgment. What stops that coming through is the judgment. And so there is a growing sense of self-compassion and simultaneously compassion for the other.
Absolutely, yes. Oh, and you're taking me to that next space of thought. The self-compassion comes up for me, which I think may also lead to an allowance. I envision myself in the practice of listening and trusting the impulses, an allowance for self-compassion and also tenderness to arrive in the space for whatever reality or experience is coming up for me. But indeed, absolutely, the opportunity for compassion for others and perhaps tenderness as well.
I think that that is part of my experience, but and I also think that it allows for whatever is to come up without judgment. And maybe like that's, there's a tenderness that holds all of it. But, you know, inside of that, there can be anything. Anything can arise. One of my teachers, Judith Koltai, used to talk about you're accessing a larger well, W-E-L-L, like a well, like a deep well, the sort of ego-driven choices where you're basically telling yourself how to move rather than allowing yourself to be moved. So yeah, she would talk about accessing this larger well. And I felt that I, for myself, my journey had partly to do with accessing the personal story stuff that was kind of locked in my body. And it isn't to say that that is completely cleared out, but allowing that created more space for a larger well of expression. And then eventually it created a space where I no longer needed to dance. So I moved away from dancing my own choreography to working with a group of five people, mature dancers themselves. And I created four series of works with them.
Thank you, Teddy. We have more with Teddy Tafel coming up after this break. Thank you. informed your curiosity about the human experience?
Part of me does, and I don't know. I don't know what drew me even to be a dancer. My family was not artistic. I mean, my brother is a musician, but I had no exposure to anything like that. My parents did love the social dance. They, you know, early memories of them sort of pushing the furniture to the edges of the room and getting into it, putting on the old records and, well, their records. And yeah, they were amazing dancers. And that was a very joyful time in my early years to witness them dancing. I think I have something in my nature that seeks depth. You know, I could give a sort of psychological reasoning in that I think that, you know, I don't think there was a lot of, let's say, psychological health in my family dynamic. There was a lot of love, but a lot of challenge. And I felt that, like I felt it so profoundly. And I'm sure that that plays somewhere in my desire to, rather than keeping everything silent and, you know, not functioning very well, to going in to my depths. So yeah, I think it's partly my nature and partly my nurture.
Is there anything that you have discovered about yourself that's been surprising to you when you have gone inward?
Well, I mean, in this practice that I'm speaking of, I would say that almost everything that arises, if I'm really listening, is a surprise. I mean, it's not a shock. It's like, oh my God. But, you know, moving in ways that I've never directed myself to move before, or accessing aspects of myself that I didn't know were there. It's kind of like, you know, when you travel to a foreign country or a country that isn't yours, I have experienced parts of myself that were kind of unexplored because my culture, my environment doesn't bring that out in me. We are constructs. And so when we start to remove the things that stop us, so the judgment and the analytical mind and interpreting something in a specific way can limit who we are. So when we're not doing that, then there is a lot of surprise, a lot of what wasn't expected or planned or, you know, sort of pre-decided. You know, we would talk in the practice about coming up to an edge. So something that would start to arise and we might stop ourselves because it's, you know, you're going into the unknown. It feels a little, I don't know exactly where this is taking me or where I'm being taken. And in that, at that edge, I can decide to continue to listen and follow, or I might decide to stop myself. But I remember just, you know, a moment of realizing that one of the things I was stopping myself from was not a, like a dark, bad thing. It was a light, joyful thing. I guess I had an idea that, yeah, that I would be more wary about going into something like my, you know, I don't know, some deeper, darker part than something that was, you know, more of the lighter, alive, joyful, lively aspects. So that was surprising. But, you know, I've also discovered certain what I would say are kind of characters that come through movement, which are, you know, in stories that are, that they bring with them. So there's lots of surprise.
Yes. Wonderful. Oh, I am so intrigued by this. I was speaking with a graduate student last week, and we were talking about the unexplored self and what that means. And one of the things that we discussed was, can you imagine if the full self is explored, whether it is through the impulses, for example, that you speak of, a deepening of conversation, a deepening of curiosity in whatever way that comes up. But can we imagine when the full self is explored, imagine the freedom that comes out of that, but in particular, the untapped areas, skills, the untapped thoughts, ideas, so much of the untapped that would come up, how exciting that would be, including we have a certain understanding of what we can do, how far we can go, how far we can throw, how much we can say, how loud we can speak. But imagine if we truly could tap into our fullest understanding of self. There are likely things about ourselves that we didn't even know we have the power to do. That was such a profound discussion for me.
I think that's what the deep practices are about. When I say deep practices, like, you know, some certain forms of meditation, certain, I don't know, authentic movement, I think is a potential practice to be included in there, that these practices that bring us to ourselves and then invite openness or an open awareness or this compassion. I do think that we need something that grounds us to encourage, allow, permit, create the environment for further exploration of self. And maybe it's a brilliant writer or, you know, a brilliant somebody who's explored in that way and has written it in a way that's accessible and inspiring. I mean, we can be inspired by a book, we can be inspired by a movie or a conversation that takes us to another place. How often have I caught myself deciding, you know, I don't know, even like deciding how this interview is going to go, which I didn't actually do, but I could have. You know, I could have got myself all kind of tied up. And what would happen if I didn't decide how this interview was going to go? If I just, you know, like we're doing right now, you're hearing me speak and it brings a thought to your mind and you express that and ask a question and I respond and we're in this relationship of listening and responding, which doesn't have anything to do with pre-deciding. And, you know, we're in an actual real conversation, which is nice. It's a practice. It's also life, like you say, life experience. And in the work that I have done with Authentic Movement, you know, there's always been a witness in that practice. So to experience being seen, to be seen by another, it takes time. It takes moving through that vulnerability, that terror. Janet Adler used to say the longing and the terror to be seen or to be heard. Very few of us can bypass the terror part. But if we live long enough and have opportunities enough, and I think environments where we can stumble and still be seen, still be heard, you know, we need each other for that too. It's not just a solo journey. Others help us. Coming back to the creative, to the creative act, when trees let their leaves go in the fall, there's some kind of trust that they'll come back in the spring. Get a lot of information from nature.
Oh, how I'm enjoying my conversation with you. And folks, if you are just tuning in, you're listening to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. I am sitting down with the wonderful Teddy Tapple. We're going to take a break and be right back with more of Turnout Radio coming up right after this. Teddy, during the break, I had the pleasure of hearing you say that a lot of your work is driven by site-specific work. Can you share thoughts, please?
Yeah, so I was saying that very early on in my creating, I started making work for not for traditional theater spaces, although I did show in some, and I'm not against performance in theater spaces. There's a lot of magic you can create there. But I was drawn to be in relationship with, direct relationship with specific environments. And so I did four major series, and they were all in situ. It's another way of saying site-specific. So the works weren't just put into the space, but were created in relationship to the space. So the space affected the dance and the dance affected the space. When you ask me about why I'm interested in the deeper layers of the human experience, why am I interested in creating work for various sites, I can just tell you that when I was first introduced to that as a possibility in my studies, in my early studies, it absolutely blew my mind that people were making works like on rooftops and in industrial buildings and in back alleys and in people's living rooms. And I don't know why it excited me so much, but it absolutely did. Yeah, I think there's something about life and art moving more closely together so that art isn't always, you know, put off in the gallery or the theater or the studio, but is more happening in the worlds that we traverse, you know, that we move through in our daily lives. Yeah, this kind of longing that art can live in real spaces.
Within the site-specific spaces and in the nuances that you share, perhaps the beauty as well is that it takes us away from what is sometimes considered to be performance, the aspect of performing, but now bringing us to a space that perhaps feels organic in a different way.
Well, there's lots in that question, you know, just this notion of performance, but there's something about a space being also alive and expressive and drawing our attention to that. Because I think that a lot of art really is about drawing our attention to something. There's something about, I've done pieces that move through city streets. I've done pieces in parks. I've done pieces in churches and in wilderness settings. There's something for me about the relationship of self and place, and that we are always affected by where we are. We're just not always conscious of how we're affected. And so it brings an awareness to this ongoing relationship between me and not me. And in terms of performance, yeah, I think my work is always interested in, you know, there's very clear frames and structures and ideas and sort of paths that the piece will take. It's not arbitrary, but I always want the performer to be in response to where they are and to who they're with. And so there's a lot of spontaneity in the work and a lot of listening and, you know, in that kind of vulnerable place of creating in real time. And in places that are public spaces, there's also other people that are using that space and interacting with awareness or not awareness with the piece. And so it shifts the notions of performance for sure. I mean, I've done pieces in places where it's just natural light and, you know, an incredible visual architecture that I could never recreate that in a theater space. I don't know why more people don't work outside of the theater, because you can just do such amazing things for no money.
And the outdoors and the people that are partaking now become collaborative in the site-specific work.
One of these series that I did was called Every Day, and it was a one-on-one. So it was one performer, one audience, and it was a walk. It was an hour-long walk through different parts of the city. And I wanted the work, the response of the dancer, of the performer, to be subtle so that it wasn't like obvious that they were performing. So their responses, we used to say it needed to be sort of under the radar. And part of that was also because I wanted the viewer, so the person who was following the performer, to not only see the performer, but see the other people and actually notice them and notice that there's so much going on that we don't pay attention to. And when we notice that, life, our world becomes very alive, very moving, full of beauty, full of surprise. So in a way, the performer was just the vehicle for the audience to see where they were and really see it.
Beautifully shared. I have so been enjoying this conversation with you today. And as we come to a close, Teddy, as I hear you share about site-specific work, embodied practice, the uncovering, and so many other shares, what rests on your heart in this moment in time, in this climate, in this space, as you move forward in your practice? What is most prevalent to you?
I guess taking care in all the ways that that can manifest. It is a challenging time in the world, undeniably. I do believe in the evolution of the species. And I think like taking care of what we can take care of is what we can do. And it matters. I was just involved in this project called The Herald, directed by Jill Connell, written by Jill and directed by Jill. And the environment of creating that piece, there was so much care and a very alive care, like not a kind of caring that was stopping anything, but a kind of caring that was making everything possible. And we made, I think, a beautiful piece that the audience was very moved by. And we had so much pleasure and joy in creating it. It was an experience of what it is to be with other people, where everybody was respected and honored. Yeah, so more of that.
I'm so touched by those words, a caring that makes everything possible. I think about the possibilities that can come out of that. What a powerful way to bring us to a close. Teddy, you have been a joy to speak with today. I want to thank you so much for joining me on the program and for exploring so many different pathways with me on the show today. Such a joy to have you on Turnout Radio. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you so much, Nicole. That was a great conversation. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. And I look forward to staying in touch with you, Jenny. That's going to happen.
Very nice. Love that.
A pleasure to have you here. Thanks again. Thank you. Welcome back to Turnout Radio. That was Teddy Topple sitting behind the mic with me today, taking some time to explore movement as an entranceway into the deeper layers of human experience. Now, of the many things that Teddy and I had an opportunity to discuss on and off the air, her works are expressions of this porous interface between the body and its surroundings, this reciprocal way that we affect and are affected by where we are. She also shares that the overriding arc of her 35-year career describes a movement away from traditional settings towards an intimate engagement with place and act as catalysts for more poetic and meaningful experiences. And if you missed the top of our conversation and the top of this episode, check out turnoutradio.com, CIUT.FM, and some of your favorite podcast platforms where this episode will soon be streaming. Turnoutradio.com is also where you can access resources and learn more about our show. To connect with our production team, email us at turnoutradio@CIUT.FM. Well, this brings us to a close of today's show. Thank you for tuning in to share time and rhythm with us. Join us again next week for more of Turnout Radio right here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Inika Hamilton. I hope your week finds you turning out to dance. Thank you.
Thank you.